Hey, welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative professionals and entrepreneurs looking to grow by learning new things, getting inspired, and breaking down the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to episode 109, Interview with Ben Keeline. Ben is a filmmaker, educator, animator, and executive director of Project Spark Studio, a nonprofit film arts education studio providing children opportunities to create and collaborate on their own computer animated film. He also is my filmmaking and creativity mentor and the first person I met in 2000 who encouraged me to go to art school and become a filmmaker. In this episode of Getting Work to Work, we talk about meeting in Israel, what it's like to make feature films, the importance of sound design, how technological advances have changed the world of independent film, and what led him to create a nonprofit. Show notes and links for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/109. Getting Work to Work is brought to you by Chris Martin Studios, a video production company telling stories with heart, edge, and fearlessness for those who dare to build a better world. Keep in touch with Chris Martin Studios by signing up for the Curiosity Lab, my weekly email newsletter at gwtw.co/109. By doing so, you'll receive my two latest guides, DIY Documentary and Build Your Platform. You'll also receive weekly inspiration and ways to increase your creativity, curiosity, and wonder. All right, you ready for this interview with Ben? Cue the transitional music, Editor Chris. Ben, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. Why don't you start by introducing yourself and share a little about what you do?
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Getting Work to Work. Basically, I am a graphic instructor here in Northern California at a charter school. We have a population of about 200 kids at the school. I have a background in cinema television from the University of Spoiled Children. I mean, University of Southern California, and an MBA from Chico University. I thought I was going to be instructing. That's why I got the MBA at the college level, but I ended up working at a middle school. Apply logic.
Cool. No fun nickname for Chico University?
They don't have as many. I feel like they were kind of the party school back in the day, and now it's just Chico.
Cool.
So yeah. Anyways.
Yeah.
That's where they're at.
So we met in 2000 in Israel, yeah, of all places.
Yes,
and
good place to meet.
That's right. And when I think back to that time, I have very vivid like images in my mind of like a wide shot of you walking through the city of Petra.
Yeah.
XL1 on a tripod in one hand, camera bag on the other, and your USC hat on.
Absolutely.
I also
think there's more tourists than that outfit.
I know, right? And I remember sitting in the King David Hotel lobby drinking orange Fanta.
Yes.
And I also remember you asking me what I wanted to do with my life because, yeah, you know, I just dropped out of school at that point, dropped out of being in a rock band. And you're like, you should go to art school and study animation.
Right.
And when you think back to that time, I mean, what stands out to you?
Well, Same impression. I mean, obviously, your lack of communication a little bit at that time was interesting. I knew that something was going on there. The curiosity. It was a really exhilarating, a surprising mission trip for me because I didn't, to be honest with you, when I got hired, who takes a videographer? That was pretty amazing. So I got to go all the way over there. And basically, as we encountered each other, I was trying to figure you out. I knew something was up, but I didn't quite know what. And your family was over there. And I could tell it was kind of a big family travel moment. And you weren't, to be honest, my biggest impression was you weren't relaying a whole lot of information. You were keeping it pretty, the cards close to the chest, for lack of a better expression. Yeah. And I appreciated that. I would almost say I dig that about you. But I'm saying I like that about you because I knew that when you did say something, you were going to tell me what you were really thinking versus, you know, a lot of verbal talking that you're not really saying very much. So I like, that's my memory. And the music. I think the other one is you got me onto that music. You like that. Remember some of the music we were listening to as we were going into those different environments in Jerusalem and different things. And I could tell you liked music. I knew a little bit of that, but you got me more into that. Yeah.
Cool. So one of the things about you that, you know, is awesome is that you've made two independent feature films. You've done the festival circuit, but now, you know, you're in Northern California working on, you know, a whole other world of projects. And so how does that past work of independent features impact the work that you do today?
Okay, good question. This is interesting. This is those strange journeys you're on. So I think everybody's artistic journey starts somewhere. And I grew up in an era where to make a feature film was kind of a big rite of passage as a filmmaker. And so I could, how should I put this, took on the planes, the trains, the automobiles, did a period piece, had kid actors, had animals, did all the things that they say are insane. And it was insane. And I guess to answer your question is I use that every day of my life now because I kind of sometimes know what not to do, which comes in pretty handy. And I think the other one is okay, this is interesting. So you really got me thinking about that question. And what if you guys remember the scene from A Man from Snowy River where he's riding the horse down the hill? Here's the deal. A film, at some point you think you're controlling it or is it controlling you? But the truth is you have to trust in all of the team with you to make something happen. And I had multiple times where all I can say is, if you guys remember, this is dating me, but obviously it's from the 80s, which is scary. It reminds me of other people I know that make 80s references that have, they instantly let you know how old they are. But anyways, the horse is literally, he's riding, but then it has to gallop down a hill. And it's literally so steep that the rider is just holding on for dear life. And the horse is doing all the work to keep moving forward and not just turning into a big Looney Tunes scene. And I guess to answer your question is that's what filmmaking got me inspired by it and scared by it and exhilarated by it all at the same time.
Yeah, that's cool. Don't worry about making 80s references because the 80s are hot right now.
Oh, good. Yeah. So we're back in. All right.
We're back in. I mean, Stranger Things is hot right now. Absolutely. And it's all 80s nostalgia. It's great. So there have been a lot of technological changes since you made your features. If you had to make the films again with today's technology, what would be different?
Well, that's interesting because we get to see that almost on a weekly basis now in Hollywood because they remake everything over again with new technology. So here's the deal. I definitely implement new technology, but I will say from my film background that I always loved sound design. I was very inspired by that. Tom Holman, Mr. THX Sound. Actually, I was in a class of six with him, which was an amazing experience. And I kind of discovered how, if you look at a lot of cinematic traps or problems that people get into, audio can really get you over some major hurdles. It's kind of the magic wand that I really discovered when I was in film school. That even to this day, sound design almost seems as important, if not more important, than all the graphics I see. Obviously, your story is kind of important. But I guess to answer your question is I would make those films again and probably harness more sound and orchestration and that kind of stuff. But yes, there would be CG. I mean, shocking. But I'm a big Peter Jackson fan, and I really appreciated how he built models and all that stuff. So.
What was one of the main takeaways from that class with Tom Holman and just the sound design world in particular?
I was completely out of my comfort zone. I had no idea what I was doing. I was totally scared out of my mind as Tom sat next to me and I supposedly knew what I was doing. I was on a huge learning curve of wetting my pants in some of those mixes. But through it, I found out that sound needed to be respected and actually needed to be pre-produced. There was a misconception at the time that somehow in post-production you'd put your sound, but thinking of sound even clear back when you're actually even writing your script and working on the set will get you way ahead if you actually have at least ready for this. Like, it's like a script. You have a plan. You have a plan.
What?
What?
A plan?
And then things can evolve from there. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what stories are you drawn to? I mean, you've mentioned The Man from Snowy River, and I see a Star Wars poster behind you. But
Sure.
What are those stories that you're naturally drawn to?
I think the stories that naturally draw me is that I am your classic 80s 10-year-old kid that fell in love with movies and thought I knew what movies were. Mm-hmm. But then as I got older, I found out there was this thing called story. And I think you and I have had very long discussions on this. You would come over to my place and we'd have all these like books on trying to write story or create stories or make stories work. And we go over to your place. You had all these books on drawing and trying to make things. Anyways, it was something I was humbled by. And then I started to go on a journey of discovery to understand what story was and how you can, I guess, harness have instincts, good story instincts, and that'll get you way further ahead. And so I'm still on a huge learning curve with that. And you were asking what movies or stories that draw me. Yeah. Is that what you were saying?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's going to be the classic. I think that's where I'm going back to the basics, and that's where the kids and I are really linking up here, is there's this thing called Once Upon a Time. You fill in the blank. And so the classic fairy tale and I have been getting along very well right now.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. I remember back in art school, that was a popular canvas to work with as well, because there's so much room to innovate and work in.
Right, right. That blank spot after that is a little tricky.
Yeah, abstract film, what?
Yeah, what?
How does nostalgia play into your work, being a kid from the 80s?
Nostalgia is a huge influence. I think I fell in love with some elements of those movies at that time that I miss. I wish they would come back, and I'm still trying to understand some of what they are. Mm. But when I see like Indiana Jones 1 versus Indiana Jones 4, I rest my case.
It's funny because you mentioned Indiana Jones, and you know, I'm not going to give anything away in Stranger Things, but let's just say the main cop in the movie has a obsession with his hat. So everywhere he goes, he has to remember to pick up his hat. And it's so Indiana Jones, because it's just like they're calling out Raiders at that point and Temple of Doom, where he's always grabbing his hat
right at that point.
I don't remember hearing the music cue. I just remember that visual cue of whoop.
There's the hat. I know. It's the little motif goes a long way.
That's right. It's like a man in his hat. You know, they talk about man versus man versus nature, man versus the machine. Now it's man in his hat.
Absolutely. Pick the right hat. I know with some friends up in Seattle, and there's a really nice hat store up there. And you could tell, I mean, this is a hat store from like clear back in like the 20s and 30s. And it's so interesting, you know, go in and try to pick your hat. That's tricky.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be almost like a psychological profile. It'd be interesting to have people go in there and pick their hat. It's like an interesting job interview.
Yeah. It's like that scene in Joe versus the Volcano, where it's like, they're in the back of the limo talking about what clothes, you know, and it's like, clothes make the man. Not to mention
like a better person in this suit. What is it? The line from Family Man.
So you have a start in cinema and television. What led you to animation and computer graphics?
It's where we're at. It's interesting. I think it found me as much as I found it. It's not something I would have done. Like back when I referenced animation, I think the patience it would have required back in the whole line drawing days and all that stuff. The new animation and having motion cap libraries and, you know, I think the speed of it all, and especially now that you can, you know, create this world and it's right in front of you and you can redo it again and again and again. I think it really was an amazing sandbox for the student to learn. It's very forgiving. Rigs don't yell at you and scream at you, and they're not prima donnas, you know, and you can morph them beyond all possible recognition and they'll somehow spring back to life. So I think the medium really works well with these kids. Mm. Yeah.
Do you worry about whether something is possible when working in animation, or No. Do you just let it ride?
We have come probably smack dab up against our squash and stretch issue. We've actually been compositing in After Effects to get more squashy, stretchy stuff going on, because we do not have, what I'm finding out is if you can think of it, we're driving like the VW Beetles of rigs versus a Ferrari rig at Pixar or something. We just do not have the control. I don't think I'd even want to be in a high speed race with my VW bugs. So we have had to learn how to be creative and to think outside the box and harness sound. Kids love to do the screams and yells. I can generate so much of that in 3 minutes, it's not even funny. So I guess to answer your question is we've really had to be creative with our limitations in the medium and got some respect for it, because at first people were kind of turned off by some of the software and rigs we were with, but we've gotten better at it, especially with the compositing.
That's cool. Yeah. How does learning enter into this process? You know, when you maybe aren't comfortable with something, you know, are you on the fly learning, or are you spending time outside of class to learn so that you're prepared, or is it a mixture of both?
Somebody told me this once, and I think I finally figured it out, is the difference between being a hobby artist and a professional artist is you basically make this serious commitment to like 3 hours, 2 hours a day that you are in your imagineering mode. And that's where I do all of those things you're talking about. I mean, there is so much coming at me right now from change. I mean, we're not even in the same software we started with. We're not even in the same rigs. And we start stuff and stuff works and then doesn't work. There's a time to do tutorials. So to answer your question is every day is different, extremely different. And I just try to put in those 2 or 3 hours a day. That's all I can do.
Yeah. That's cool. Because I think a lot of times there's this, I see it in kind of the circles that I walk in, is that, you know, once you kind of get to a certain point, you just keep kind of living in that same level of ability and you don't spend that 2 to 3 hours. And then you wake up one day disillusioned to where you're at in life.
What?
What?
What? You weren't investing in that tank? That might have been your spark. Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, there's no fuel. There's no fuel in the car. I wonder why it's not moving.
So speaking of Spark, you recently created a nonprofit called Project Spark Studio. What was the spark that led to creating that nonprofit?
There's this guy named Chris Martin that I met in Israel. So here's the deal. Yeah, I want to not take total credit for this. So the deal is I am with a group. My wife is involved. I am involved. Obviously, another friend, dear friend down in LA, Mark Palmerville, is involved. This is the brainchild of all of us kind of brainstorming on this, and it has been very challenging to even come up with how we grow. I think growth has been a big part of what we've been trying to figure out. How do we grow as artists? How do we grow as people? So what led us to this point, i.e. the spark, is that basically we've seen all this growth happening, and we knew it needed to, how should I put it? It's like you've grown out of your little box, and if you don't acknowledge it, you're literally going to be like the little woman with all of her little kids running in the shoe. I mean, you're going to be out of your mind. So we had to grow. I guess what I'm trying to say is that we had to grow, or we were going to explode. Yeah. So we had to come up with something. Yeah.
So in that journey of growth, why did you decide to go the route of a nonprofit?
Went the round of a nonprofit because of a phrase, and you might remember this phrase, is it really stuck with me even back when you and I were working together, is you can't stop the parade to pick up a dime. We had used that quite a bit, and what I finally realized is that I think I really enjoy working with the dime, and not only that, but I think I like to show people the dime, and so the nonprofit model worked really well to do that, because in a profit-driven artistic world, the dime can change. It's maybe a kid that isn't quite fitting in. He's or she is skeptical about their gifts and talents and not sure and reluctant. And that interests me. And I think that, I guess, the nonprofit model really allows us to do that and to take a risk on that. And it's not perfect. There is no perfect. I know there's great nonprofits out there. I've looked at different ones and some not so great ones, but I thought for us specifically, that's what our, you know, let's stop the parade and pick up a few dimes here. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, that's cool, because what I'm hearing you talk about is it's not just about the money and the, you know, it's about investing in people and really bringing out their artistic gifts. And right. That's really what it's about, it sounds like.
It is. It is. And it is so unique, because that's what's so great. When you even say the word film, there's so many different facets, young and old, different skill sets. Some love the animation. Some love the voice acting. You know, what's great is it's just it brings quite a collaboration. And so for students to explore and try new things, and i.e. just like me, kind of in that Tom Holman class, or building tree forts, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's kind of our sandbox that we get to play. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize this. The best metaphor I can give you is we got a rescue dog. This is kind of a strange one, so I hope the kids don't take it personally. But anyways, literally, we got this little guy, and he's a poodle mix, and he did not know how to play. Didn't know how to play. It was weird, but he'd kind of sit there and you'd throw the ball and he's like, what the heck? And I realized I got to teach this dog how to play. I mean, you just think it comes so in. There's this sense in us that we think that kids somehow, and I don't try to say kids are dogs, but the thing I'm after is that you think they just naturally gravitate to play. But either through a hurt or a miscommunication or something, they don't know how to just be kids again and have fun with this medium that's kind of intimidating or confusing. And so I just teach them how to play and have fun. And right in front of them, I make mistakes as well. I mean, I just had a huge train wreck yesterday with this tutorial we were going on, and it was going sideways in the night, and we're trying to make sparks coming out of the car. And I finally just had to say at the end of the hour, okay, are your brains as fried as mine? Because we'll revisit it. But it was funny, because I saw some good ideas there, and we'll revisit it next week. And so I'm trying to model that we didn't fail. Mm-hmm. We just... our brains exploded.
Yeah.
we'll have to revisit the idea. But I like to model that for them, and I think that I'm trying to get, I think I appreciated when I was younger, I had people around me do the same thing for me.
What kind of impact does that have on their ability to create long term, not just in the short term, but over a course, over several years that maybe they're a part of your classes?
Well, that's interesting. I don't know. I have so many different students now that are it's kind of fun. They're finally kind of going off into life, mm-hmm. whatever that is. But basically, you know, one student I had went in the Marines. Another one, he and his dad were did a lawn business, and now they're actually flying drones.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, I just think what's fun is, you know, it's seeing them. You see that raw talent. And just like anybody, you're always curious, I wonder what they're going to do with it. I mean, like watching you, I mean, with this radio program. I mean, I always think I have a possible concept. You know, I bet you they'll end up doing this. And oftentimes I am totally, I had no clue, you know? And it's like me being able to stand here today as we're even having this conversation and tell you, oh yeah, we're going to start a nonprofit. I didn't think I'd be doing this 2 years ago. Yeah. I had no clue. So to answer your question is that's, I think, the fun of it is kind of to see, hopefully, but a confidence, artistic confidence to try new things, like, you know, you're driving on a lawnmower and then you're flying a drone. I mean, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, just let it rip. See what happens.
Well, it's awesome, too, because as I was kind of reflecting upon this interview, I was thinking about even years ago when we were talking about teaching classes through the video ministry and how, yeah. you know, your dream was always to build a workforce of able bodies through like junior college or, you know, college
right.
courses, because, yeah. you know, they were ready, willing, and able.
Right.
So to me, this nonprofit actually seems like a natural extension of that original dream.
Correct. It's totally, like you said, I was thinking junior college, and I think that's what you and I were talking about back in the day. And then a good friend started a charter school and asked me, I mean, that classic thing, you know, you're asked to do something and you're like, middle school kids, what am I going to do with them? You know, to be honest, and then animation, these are two things I did not picture myself doing, but so many things have changed. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like those two little dots were connecting. And then to have this time with story, I mean, you just have not lived until you've tried to explain story to middle school kids. I mean, it is like... you really got to know what you're doing. I'm just saying it's very humbling, but I think at the same time, I see myself in them, and I think it's fun to see the creativity kind of, you know, explode.
Yeah. Do you ever tell them stories about when you were their age and what you were building and what you were doing, and kind of the show them the life that you were living when you were their age?
Right. I try to do it in moderation. I think of when my dad tells me stories, I know how much it kind of drives me nuts after a while, because it's like, Dad, I know this is really cool, but I'm not with you doing that story, so I don't get it. But it is, I do tell them things from time to time, and they do ask, but to answer your question, is most of it is right here, right now, today, what we're doing. And so I use a lot of what I've done as more intuition to help guide them through it, but I guess I'm not quite at the, let's sit down and tell a story about all these crazy things we did. Because I think part of it is they literally, I start to tell them, even making some of the movie props and stuff, and there's no context. That's what a teacher told me this once, you know. It's like, if they don't have a context for building something, then when you try to explain how you built something, they're like, I don't, what?
Yeah. Well, it's like trying to teach web design without an understanding of what the internet is.
Right. It gets a little tricky.
It does.
Yeah.
So what response has this project had since starting? I mean, have you won awards? Have you won accolades? What has been the response?
We have had a really good response. It's been fun. We have 14 awards here locally with our local film festival. And, you know, that's another amazing story. A local Rotary started a film festival, get the schools competing, and it's been really healthy for the kids. It reminds me a lot of when you take your sports team to an event or different things. It kind of gives them a venue. It's the red carpet. So to answer your question is, we've won locally, and then we also, our big win was we've started to do the international film festivals because of our collaborative projects. And we did win a festival in Madrid, Spain, which totally blew me away because it was one of the first ones we applied to. And what made me laugh was we were in absolutely no position to go to the film festival, but that's okay.
Yeah.
So anyways, we've won in Madrid.
You mentioned international. What kind of international work have you done?
The international was another brain. We had taken a trip to Europe about 3 years ago and seen both England and Ireland, you know, the UK, that kind of stuff. And it was funny, but when we started this program doing the graphics and different things, it just reminded me a lot of fairy tales. And so with the castles and the leprechauns and all that stuff, I just was like, wow, I wonder if we could do it with a school. And then the tech had come along where you could actually have, I wonder if you could have a classroom to classroom interaction. So then the brainstorm even started further where I'm like, okay, time zone wise, okay, it's 8 hours difference, you know, blah, blah, blah. So we actually found this window where 2:30 for them in Ireland was 6:30 for us in the morning. So then we actually, through some connections, and I'll just be honest, a lot of work to try to find somebody, we found a school that would take a risk on us, and we did a collaborative film together. We ended up being like the little mini Pixar. We did the animation, and they did the voices, but we wrote the story together. And that was so interesting, because I'll tell you, wow. Us writing what we think is an Irish fairy tale and then sending it over to Ireland and having rewritten by an Irish kids and sent back. It was, I mean, I know more about Ireland now than I've ever in my whole life because of that experience. It's too cold. You think we laughed at you. There is humor similarities, but just it's amazing culturally how we have such different ideas of funny. I mean, we had a scene where this husband and wife were talking and she goes, honey, does this dress make me look fat? The Irish kids did not find that funny at all. But when she walked in the same door and she goes, honey, what do you think of my new hairdo? And he doesn't look at it. They just thought that was like absolutely roaring funny. It was so different. Yeah.
What advice would you give to someone who wants to do something but feels unqualified, or maybe like it's beyond their abilities, or maybe they have fear to pursue that thing?
Those elements should be there. If they're not there, you're probably not pursuing the right thing. And I would say you have to trust your instincts as they grow. As the fear increases, as the insecurity increases, you're heading in the right direction. And one of the best things I've ever heard, it's kind of fun when you look at different little reflections from people who've lived most of their, you know, a good life and different things, is they're so glad they faced their fears, you know, and that gratitude for that. I mean, that's really humbling. You're like, I've got a lot of fears. How come I don't face more of them? But it's funny how that's one of their number one wishes they would have, you know, climbed that mountain. And the other one is, I would say, and that's the thing I'm really working with the kids on, and I myself is sitting here as we're launching our nonprofit, it's supposed to be bigger than you. You're not supposed to be able to do it on your own. It's going to take a team of people to do it. And, you know, it's fun. Those relationships are kind of the spark, the energizing part of it that makes it fun when you're doing it together. Because all these things, I mean, sharing it with my students and our team, you know, my wife and Mark down there in LA and different things, that's we've faced some crazy stuff, but I think facing it together makes it fun. Yeah.
So do you think you'll make another feature one of these days?
Absolutely. That was a rite of passage. I mean, I am still an 80s kid. I can't get rid of that. And, you know, there's this thing called, I mean, video stores are fading away, but they still have these things called movie theaters. I mean, maybe those will fade away too, but I think we call the feature the famous 90 minutes or whatever it is. I feel like it's kind of like your, I mean, for me anyways, it's kind of like your Jedi light sword making moment, you know? And so I would like to take on a feature again someday again, but to be honest with you, I don't know when. And I don't even know what is technology going to look like in the next week. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know if the people making the technology really know.
I think we've opened Pandora's box.
So what keeps you motivated and moving forward each day with all that you do?
You might find this interesting. I teach part-time. I don't teach full-time. And I have a lot of respect for full-time teachers. I don't think I could do it, to be honest. I love it too much, to be honest. And my parents have a ranch out in Palo Cedro. They're getting older. And so I go out and help them. And I think that as I pull a plow around a field and, you know, walk down by a creek, and I think, just get away from the tech, it grounds me. You know, I guess I am like, what is it, Die Hard, taking his shoes off and squeezing his anyways, not trying to, but it is for me, those are I can channel, you know, with the smells and sounds and everything. I remember being a kid walking that same creek and that around that same tree, and I think it just helps me, it reminds me of where I've come from. And then I think also, you know, I think it's not tech, just being honest. Yeah. It's not tech.
Well, and I imagine too, when you're out in that field, when you're out plowing, the ideas are just running through your brain like crazy.
Best thing I could ever do. I have gone out there with so many, I start one thing and my mind goes somewhere else. And it's, you know, I get it. I'd be honest with you, I don't know if I could plow the field without doing the graphics program. They kind of go hand in hand, because I don't know what I would do with all that time if I didn't have it. But like you said, I'm amazed what your brain does. Two things: it relaxes, and then it also really starts to kind of surprise you. It's some, oh my goodness, here's a couple other ideas we can try. Yeah.
So what is one film everyone should see?
I had to really think about this, and I'm going to stick with this one. I'm officially going to say the original Empire Strikes Back with the Irvin Kershner director's commentary going is the best film school moment, I think. I love watching that. I always get a little more out of him every time I watch it. We watch it once a year. And so I know it seems a little, I've always been a big Star Wars fan, but I think somehow George facing his flaws and then having that director come and fix his flaws, I really like that. And I think I really enjoy that. Yeah.
What was one of the takeaways that you always remember from that commentary?
People like to see sparks. Sparks. No, but the face. He really talks a lot about, as George is going off on all his tangents, all of his creative, which I get it. It's. I mean, Yoda and puppets, all this stuff. He's constantly grounding you in the human condition and trying to get character and pathos and all these things to fire, be going through anything he can grab, as George is throwing all these crazy, you know, AT-AT walkers and all this stuff. And I like that challenge, because I feel like, how did he end up directing it? And I don't even think he completely understood how he ended up directing it. He was totally out of his comfort zone. And I really enjoy hearing that guy talk about it. Yeah.
So final question. I know we're coming up against the end of your break, but what are you excited about today?
I am excited about my little girl dressing up as a parrot. And we are going to be pirates, and we are going to go Halloween trick-or-treating tonight. She's just about two. And she is starting to actually connect little words together in sentences that don't totally make a lot of sense. And then she's also mimicking a lot, which is she's actually saying a lot of my phrases back to me, which is very scary.
Oh.
But she's my parrot. So we'll see what happens.
Well, Ben, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. And I personally want to thank you for the impact that you've had on my life over the past 17 years. I can honestly say without your influence in the beginning, I wouldn't be the filmmaker, artist, and all fill in the blank that I am today. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you for your thank you, Chris. And I also wanted to say that also it's been so much fun to work with you. And I think I saw that potential in you clear back when I saw in Israel. And I'm just so glad that you're facing your fears and, you know, going for it and getting work to work and helping others in the process. I mean, what an energizing experience. So thank you.
That does it for this episode of Getting Work to Work. Thank you to Ben for taking time to share about creativity, story, filmmaking, and the power of nostalgia. And thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with your friends, other creative professionals, and entrepreneurs? You can send them to gwtw.co or have them search for Getting Work to Work on most podcast platforms. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work, or know someone who should be on the show? Maybe you need some advice or just want someone to say hi to. Drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm chris@chrismartinstudios.com. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.